broadcasting from the UNMC College of Nursing. Get ready for RN Huddle, the podcast dedicated to bringing hot topics for and by nurses to the table.
Welcome to the NPIAP podcast. I'm really thrilled with the guests that I have today. I'm hoping we can get you excited about some opportunities in pressure injury prevention that you may not have thought of. This is Joyce Black. I'm Joyce Black, your host. And as you know, I start out with what's in my mailbox. This is sort of an easy one. You're going to get this one. Here's the question. The hospital had a patient admitted from the community with an unstageable pressure injury. The surgeons took the patient to the operating room and debrided it. So now, is the wound a stage 4 or is it a surgical wound? I'm going to give you one guess. It's a stage 4. If you look at the definition of unstageable, what the definition says is until the necrotic tissue is removed, the pressure injury can't be staged. And so once it can be staged, to stage it by what its appearance is, it's a stage 4. Kind of an easy question. Because it was on admission, present on admission, it therefore is community acquired, the hospital is not at risk. So let me introduce to you my first guest today. It's Lisa Grubb. I want Lisa to introduce herself to you, where she's from, and what we're going to talk about. Lisa, please introduce yourself to the group.
Hello, my name is Lisa Grubb, and I am an assistant professor at the Johns Hopkins University School of Nursing. And I'm also a certified wound nurse, and I've been interested in pressure injury prevention, I would say, for the majority of my career. And my research that I do at the university is in primarily pressure injury prevention. And we're going to talk about the ER today. And I am absolutely thrilled to be here with you.
Lisa, I think the emergency room is not an area that the average wound nurse thinks of. They usually get their consults to go up on the floors, perhaps the ICU, perhaps the general floors, and look at pressure injuries that have come in or developed while the hospital, you know, during hospitalization. How did you start thinking about the emergency room as a place where they might have started or perhaps came in and we didn't even see it? How did you even think about that?
I think that's an amazing point, Joyce, that here we are, you know, we have amazing guidelines, we have amazing processes to prevent pressure injury, and yet all we hear about are increasing pressure injury prevalence, increasing pressure injury incidence. How do we measure pressure injury? How can we get a handle on this? And I started to look and really kind of tear apart, if you will, patients were being counted in our numbers. And I started to look and see that these patients were, their pressure injury was being discovered either right on admission to the unit or very, very early on in their admission, and started to think about, well, wait a minute, I wonder if this is happening outside of the nursing units, and could this be happening in our emergency departments, and what are we doing about it in our emergency departments? So it was really from, again, feeling like we were definitely missing something.
So your sense is that in our estimation of risk and discovery, we weren't going back and looking at the ER. We were starting at home plate as when this patient arrived and not looking backwards to where that patient was before. Is that what you're telling me?
Absolutely.
So how did you tackle this? I could tell you from my experience, the ER sees themselves as a place to get the patient in and triage them out. So how did you introduce, I presume you introduced a bundle of care that started in the ER. That's a big hill to climb. So how did you do that?
Absolutely. In fact, one of my advisors for my project said, are you crazy? Do you want to graduate with your doctorate degree? You really want to go after this? I think it's really about meeting the ER where they are. I spent a lot of time in the emergency department to really learn about their workflows and really work with the ER team and really figure out, you know, what does their day look like, so that I could be very realistic with regards to what I was asking them to do. And obviously the C-suite has to be involved. The leadership has to sign off on this and understand that to make a huge impact, make a huge improvement. And I think you have to be very, very realistic. I think you have to look at the workflow of the ED. You can't ask them to do a lot of things that are outside of their workflow. And this bundle of interventions that I put together based on the evidence, I think was simplified and really took into account the emergency department and how busy they are and their workflow.
So Lisa, one of the things that I heard you say that I really think is important is how you immersed yourself into the emergency room workflow. You didn't come in as the commander on high, you know, the chief of wound care, and say, okay, this is the way it's going to go, guys. You're going to do this bundle starting Monday. I've ordered all the supplies and here you go. Am I reading you right? Because I guess I could say from my own experience, if you tried that, that won't work. They would just push back.
Oh, absolutely. I think really, you know, in that phase, if you will, I think you have to spend a lot of time in that unfreezing phase to really understand the workflow and really spend time and really help them to understand what the problem is. And I think one of the issues with the ER is that they don't see the patients that you described initially. They don't see those patients that, you know, have the stage 4 unstageable wounds. They don't understand what happens. So I think that is also very important to get them to understand, you know, here's what can happen to this patient. I did a lot of education with the nurses, but I use pictures. I use pressure injury pictures to really help them to understand what can happen to these patients if we don't do some very simple directed pressure injury prevention. And I really think that that made a huge difference for the nurses in the ER.
So I see two groups of patients, and I want to kind of split this in half. I see the patients at risk for pressure injury development while in the ED. You know, our hospital is on red all of the time. So the Braden scale doesn't work in the ED, I presume. Or did you make it work? Did you tweak it to work? Or did you look at different risk factors altogether, like the transport board?
I looked at all different risk factors, Dr. Black. And what we did, I got some pushback on this that because, again, my advisors really wanted me to utilize the Braden scale score. And I took a firm stance and said, I'm not going to do that. It's going to be meaningless for these nurses. I'm going to ask them to do one extra thing that's not going to matter to them. So what we did is we really used the definition of risk as being admitted to the hospital, and we excluded all of our observation patients because it's very hard to get admitted to a hospital today. And then what I looked at after we had the sample, I looked at the comorbidities. And what I found is the majority of these patients have between 12 and 15 comorbidities. So these patients are sick, and I didn't trouble the ER with something that, again, would take them time and would be meaningless. So I used basically being admitted to the hospital as the risk criteria.
How'd that go over? Were they attuned to that? Could they appreciate that risk? If you were sick enough to come into the emergency room and you were going to get admitted, you were at risk of pressure injury that could start in the ED or start in the OR or the MRI, et cetera, et cetera. Did that work? Did that go over?
It did. Absolutely. And I think they were very appreciative that, again, you know, we were saying, hey, we definitely need to do something here. This is a problem for us. This is a challenge, but we want to respect your time and we want to get your input and we know how busy you are. And that really increased the buy-in with the emergency room staff and made everybody happy. So it was something that the ER leadership could buy into and they could back because it was something that was very reasonable, not tasking the ER team. And, you know, it was really something that the ER physicians were very interested in as well, because in order to properly assess these patients, we had to disrobe the patients, right? So the ER physicians were very happy about that aspect of the intervention as well. So we really had everybody's buy-in to make this happen and to really do this PI prevention.
That's excellent. So now that you've got them buying in for risk, tell me about the bundle that you created to address the risk.
The risk was very simple. It was, again, I looked at the actions of a reasonable, prudent nurse. And that's to do a skin assessment on every patient that's admitted. So we utilized that and said, it is within your practice. It's your responsibility to make certain that you know what this individual skin looks like. And in order to do that, you have to disrobe the patient. And then we looked at the work by Santa Maria and colleagues, and it was right around the time that your paper on supporting the use of preventative dressings came out. So that was right on that time frame as well. So we looked at utilizing the preventative dressings, and I wanted to look at preventing on the sacrum, placing the preventative dressing on the sacrum and the heels. But the Nurse Practice Council opted to start with the preventative foam dressing on just the sacrum. So that was the second part of the bundle. And then the third part of the bundle was to consult the WOCN nurse. If you have something that you're uncomfortable with, if you don't like the look of this patient's skin, we'll put a consult in. So again, very, very straightforward, very, very simple.
So I'll bet, Lisa, that when you were examining the patient's skin for the potential application of a dressing, you also found patients that had wounds.
We absolutely did. We absolutely found patients that had wounds. And that was, again, something that we were wondering if we weren't capturing those patients when they were being admitted to the unit. So we definitely found patients that had wounds and had problems.
Yeah, and so the early treatment of a pressure injury is equally important to the prevention of a pressure injury. So tell me where this material was kept. Was it handy? Because, you know, when I look at the ER now, a lot of the material is someplace else. So did you make it convenient? Because I think about some of the traumatized patients, you get them up on their side, you're not there for long. So were the dressings up at the head of the cart, or where did you place them so that you could get them on quickly?
We did. We actually put them we have separate carts in each one of our ER bays, and that's where we put them. And that was what the ER nurses told us. And I spent a lot of time with the products material management individual for the ER to make certain that we had the supply ready, we had it in our supply closet, and that was part of his stocking process. Because you're right, there is nothing worse than when, you know, you tell the nurses to do this, apply this dressing, and then you don't have it available. So we made certain that was not a barrier in this case.
So Lisa, what I think you're telling me is you devised a process that included a product, and both are equally important. It's very frustrating to have an excellent process when you haven't got a product to support it. So what advice would you give my listeners, our listeners in this case, if they want to take this process that you described back to the ER this afternoon and try to think it through in their local hospital?
I would say that you have to listen to your nurses, and you have to make sure that they have input into this process and that they understand the outcome of not preventing a pressure injury and what can happen to patients. And ask them, you know, what will work for you and what is important to you, and make them part of the conversation and part of the team, because I believe that we absolutely have to start pressure injury prevention and identification, as you shared, Dr. Black, in the emergency department, because our patients are sicker and sicker, and ED utilization is increasing, certainly across our country.
Lisa, the dressing that you used was the Mepilex bordered foam for the sacrum, correct?
Correct, yes.
Anything else come to mind that you would substitute for that dressing?
No, absolutely not. I mean, we absolutely love the dressing. I think it's proven. I've seen that dressing do amazing things, and the nurses absolutely love that dressing. So absolutely not.
Well, let me say thanks to Lisa Grubb. Lisa's with the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing in Baltimore, Maryland. I appreciate the time she spent with us today talking about pressure injury prevention in the emergency department. This is Joyce Black as your podcast conversationalist, if you will. And thank you to Courtney Smith for being the coordinator and the editor of all the mistakes I make as I record this thing. Thank you much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to RN Huddle. To stay connected, follow us on Twitter and Facebook at UNMCCNE or check out unmc.edu/CNE for more program information.